I have
current geek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the talk show about items of interest to the geeks of the world and you. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt.
Hello, Scott Johnson. It is good to talk geeky news and topics with you today on this Current Geek.
I agree. On a week where Tom's traveling tomorrow, heading down to South by Southwest, participating in South by So Wasted. And should be a good time down there. I'm very excited to hear how things go. Does that mean that...
I always hesitate to call it South by So Wasted because I feel that's overpromising for me.
Yeah. For Tom, it is. Because you're pretty moderate, dude. Not really.
These days.
Yeah.
My younger days, Scott.
Yeah.
If you could have seen me then.
He'd be plastered one side of the room to the other.
And in Austin, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, everything ever bad or good happens in the world happens in Austin, so may as well be you this week. But yeah, heading down there, that'll be fun. And how are you doing DTNS tomorrow? Remotely? Is that the plan?
I am not doing DTNS tomorrow, Scott. I will miss you.
I'll miss you.
But Sarah Lane and Roger Chang will be right there alongside you on Daily Tech News Show, so I am not worried one little bit.
Well, I feel like I'm with friends. Even though
you will be
the number one friend, won't be there.
As Yoda said, you will be.
I feel like the context was different though.
Yeah,
when he said that, but it's okay. I'm going to take heart in it, and we're going to dive right in, folks. Welcome to Current Geek. Let's talk about these.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, there's a litany of things we should talk about. What are they?
Does it ever bother you that our intro might be a political turnoff for people who didn't vote for Hoover?
Yeah, but they're too busy being eaten by worms. They're fine. And the ones that are still alive, they don't remember. They don't know.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Hey, Game of Thrones dropped a final season trailer on the internet mere minutes before this show. Scott Johnson watched it. Mm. And what are your reactions, Mr. Johnson?
Well, I was here, Tom, in the wake of the great trailering of 2019. No, somehow I missed it this morning. I guess it's been out for most of the day. And I don't know, just missed all my news feeds and I didn't see it. But normally this would be something I'm all over.
You were too busy following that Hoover bashing site.
I guess so. News. Yeah, all this fake news about Hoover. He didn't, in fact, invent the vacuum, which I didn't know. So there you go. There's
fake
one thing.
News.
So anyway, I am very excited. I mean, I've been excited leading up to this. This is kind of a huge deal if you're a Game of Thrones fan. It's the big final push, and it's been a while coming. I feel like we've waited forever since we last had some episodes. And I'm excited about it. I guess I'm a little surprised how much... now that I've basked in it for a minute, I'm surprised how much focus is on on characters I didn't expect to have some focus in the trailer, and how many characters I didn't see hardly at all in the trailer. In fact, Tyrion barely shows up near the end.
Yeah, you see him walking up to a dragon, and my reaction was like, I don't know if there's enough dragons for you anymore, Tyrion.
No, it may not be. But yeah, like he's such a pivotal part of that show that you'd think that you'd see more of him. I don't actually think this... says much
about
how...
You don't see a lot of any one character.
No.
You see a tiny bit... You see the ice and the fire. Mm-hmm. Danny and Jon Snow. Mm-hmm. You see them a couple of times. You see Jaime Lannister from the back once and then from the front another time. I don't know if you see anybody else twice.
Not really. No, they're the sister.
You get a lot of Arya right up the top.
Yeah, you know? Arya's got a little monologue at the top and some running mm-hmm. going on and some vengeance and all that. And that's great. But
she loves death. She's goth Arya.
Oh, she's totally goth Arya. Yeah, she's listening to The Cure. It's great. But her sister, you barely get a glimpse of her. I would think she's pivotal.
She's busy being Jean Grey, too.
I guess she's going to be Dark Phoenix before she's going to be anything else. But
Ice Phoenix.
Ice Phoenix. Very good. I'm a little surprised that we didn't see her. And that's what makes me think that it doesn't matter what I'm seeing. What I'm seeing is bits and pieces that work well for a trailer and not emphasis on character because... they've all got huge roles to play and stuff to finish up in this final season. So
yeah, I'll be honest. This isn't getting me as excited as I thought it might, although it is getting me excited.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Because I'm just ready to see it, right?
Yeah.
It's like I get excited when I see Daenerys and Jon Snow on screen, but then they don't do much, mm-hmm. right? It's such quick cuts of everything. I get excited when I see the back of Jaime Lannister's head on a boat. That's exciting. What's he doing on a boat? It seems to be an Ironborn boat. Well, what's he doing on an Ironborn boat? Well, that's interesting. Mm. But I don't get any answers to any of that. Eileen and I, after we watched it this morning, you know, did some speculation about what Cersei might be up to and Jaime might be up to. But really, I think where my head's at is like, just give me the episodes. Make it April 14th. I'm ready.
Yeah,
to watch.
Let's go. So what is this, a month and a few days? Yeah, month and a week and a half or something.
Yeah, a month of Sundays, I think.
Oh, look at that. I can live with that.
Totally no, it's that. The 5th, right? So 39 days?
Yeah. Oh my God. So that reminds me, my wife Kim, I was always caught up every week with the show. That's just the way it's been since the beginning, since 2011. 2011. Mm. Or no, that wouldn't be right with it.
Heady days, those.
I don't think that's right. Because once you hit 10, you no longer did aughts. You didn't have the O's anymore. Anyway.
No, 2011 was the first year that people started being like, should we drop the aughts? I guess we should drop the aughts.
I remember there was a lot of conversation about that. But
there was a lot of 2010, 2011 for a while.
Yeah. Well, I got, what are we, the teens now? Now that we're in the teens, I realized that I have kept up with the show moment to moment. And my wife did most of that with me until the final season. And for some reason, we got split apart on our schedule. And she didn't keep up with me. Yeah, we've been separated for a year.
One of you was in a campaign down south. One of you was fighting at the wall.
This is a, you know, I didn't mean to come out like this, but I have an announcement to make. Kim and I have been separated by the south and the north for the last year. But she wants to catch up. So my thing is, I'm going to hang this in front of her and go, look at this rad trailer. You can't not be caught up when things hit the ground on April 14th.
When the ice hits the wall.
Right. Yeah. Right. That was a great old Led Zeppelin song. Loved it. When the Ice Hits the Wall.
Yeah, the unreleased Ice Hits the Wall album.
So anyway, very exciting. Well done, Game of Thrones. Now we're excited for all your spinoffs after that. And let's get this final season.
You know, Led Zeppelin had so many Tolkien references, you know, in a couple of Misty Mountain Hop and stuff. It would be crazy to think what a Led Zeppelin song inspired by Game of Thrones would be.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's got to be. I mean, think about it. Like, there were so many rock and metal bands took inspiration from Tolkien's work. Is there a whole generation, or is it too mainstream now? Is Game of Thrones too much of a mainstream thing for anyone to think it's too cool to have?
I don't think
music?
It's too mainstream, but it becomes parody really fast.
Yeah.
Because I know there was a really cool Black and Yellow song that was based on an actual rap song called Black and Yellow, but it was Baratheon Black and Yellow, you know?
Yeah.
But it was a parody. And then there are people who actually record like rock versions of The Bear and the Maiden Fair. Those are just songs from the book, from the show,
right?
That have been recorded. So, yeah, it's like the distance isn't enough. You can get too close to it.
Yeah, feels like kids. If you grew up in the '60s and the '70s, you know, it was a subculture. It was a genre that a lot of people just didn't
that's
know.
The thing. Yeah,
and they didn't know how to get close enough to it. And D&D was ostracized by old people and beloved by kids. And so
if Led Zeppelin's going to get their album on Atlantic Records, they're going to have to slip the references in through the side door or the outdoor, actually. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Our next story asks the question, is Disney shutting down Marvel Comics? And our answer is no. Oh, no one said they were.
Controversial topic we got here going on.
You actually texted me about this. I was curious if you had seen this on our subreddit or if you had just found out about it elsewhere.
I found it in just a news feed that I follow, and it was very link-baity. I mean, the very essence of it is. But I kind of liked the discussion around it because comics aren't doing that great across the board.
Right.
DC
and
Marvel.
Honestly, that discussion is substantive and better than the Disney's going to shut down. I mean, Disney's not going to shut down Marvel Comics. They'd be stupid to shut down Marvel Comics. Here's how this happened, and you, my friends, are responsible for the things you say on the internet and for not clicking on clickbaity headlines and not passing along things that aren't true. Marvel editor-in-chief CB Cebulski and chief creative officer Joe Quesada host a panel at South by Southwest soon about the history and far-reaching influence of the Marvel Comics universe. That's what the panel's about. The history and far-reaching influence of the Marvel Comics universe. In this panel, The description says they will discuss how Marvel Comics has fed the success of movies, TV shows, and video games. So, in other words, explaining how, gee, if we didn't have comics, we wouldn't have as good of a collection of movies, TV shows, and video games. Mm. Now, Bleeding Cool combined this news with a previous Bleeding Cool column from Brian Hibbs that had been criticizing the business of comics. And in Bleeding Cool's article, they speculate on maybe this sort of panel being needed so that Disney can justify continuing Marvel Comics, because the comics industry is in trouble and they need to be telling themselves the story in order to say, yes, no, we do need to keep doing Marvel Comics, obviously, because it pays off in movies, TV shows. None of this said that Disney in any way was considering shutting down Marvel Comics. It was just Bleeding Cool's sort of, hey, you know, this is an interesting thought. I wonder if this is part of what's going on with Disney and why Cebulski and Quesada might host this kind of panel at South by Southwest. And Jude Terror, who wrote the Bleeding Cool article, wrote, that's our take anyway. And of course, your mileage may vary. Clearly stating this is an opinion piece.
Yeah.
How does that become shutting down Marvel Comics? Mm. It's people being irresponsible on the internet. That's
I think part of it is, okay, total speculation on my part, but I think part of the reason people jump on this, outside of all the other regular reasons, like, you know, everybody has a voice now, so we all are saying things about everything, and some of us are serious, and some of us aren't, and some of us can't tell, and blah, blah, blah. All that, forget about all that for a minute. Marvel is known in recent years for being willing to drop the hammer on certain things when they think it's not working out. In particular, if you follow the gaming divisions over at Disney at all, they kind of out of nowhere and without much fanfare dumped all their gaming divisions, just closed studios, right, two of which were here in Salt Lake City, and got completely kiboshed with products.
LucasArts was a victim of that as well.
Correct. And they, while they retain those names and everything, you know, that stuff got smushed. The Disney Infinity stuff with the toys, the live category and all of that was profitable. Even just selling the figures was a profitable venture for Disney. They were making money, but they weren't making the kind of money that this was the sort of thing that they wanted to sort of be in the business of. And they thought, as a general corporate strategy, at least this is how it was told in various interviews and quotes, they wanted to outsource that stuff and go to the third-party publishers and let that be that world, and we'll be the content creators, and we'll manage that, and we'll watch that, but we'll let EA and we'll let whoever else we decide to give it to, we'll let them make the video games. We're not going to make our own anymore. And so a lot of people saw that as like, ooh, geez, Disney, why don't you cut off your nose to spite your face and do that awful quick? So I think people were just kind of feeling that way. And then I had friends who piped in on this issue. Neighbor of mine, friend of mine, who says, well, it makes sense to me that they might do that one day. And I said, well, why? He says, well, most of the people that enjoy these movies never read the comics anyway. Black Panther is a good example of that. There's so many people who haven't read these sort of B-tier comics in the history of Marvel. Ant-Man, for example, even when he was with the Avengers. Avengers was kind of B-tier for a long time anyway. Marvel's taken that content and taken it to a new place, but it doesn't mean you have to know the comics to enjoy the films and therefore have successful film franchises. And kind of, I understand what he means. You know what I mean? Like, they've proven that with or without the comics, they can make something like, again, Ant-Man or Doctor Strange, otherwise very unapproachable film properties, made them into very successful film properties and part of a larger universe and all of this stuff. Do we really need the comics as an active publishing arm happening all the time to underpin that, to make sure it's stable? And the answer is maybe not. My take is that Disney was never going to do this anyway, and that they do value it, and that they wouldn't shut it down, even when it's going through a kind of a raw time right now. Part of that's cost of comics. There's a lot of stuff. There's so many factors to talk about with this, but keeping it simple, I don't think Disney gets rid of Marvel comics, that is. And I think they see that the films are better for having it there and don't exist without it at all. So it would be kind of cutting their nose off to spite their face, and I don't think they will. However, I felt like my friend kind of had a point about their success in taking otherwise obscure stuff you've never even heard about and made it mainstream, Oscar-worthy stuff.
There's a conversation to be had there with your friend
Yeah.
about whether if you didn't have the enthusiasm of the fans of the comics driving it, whether it ever gets big enough to catch the attention of the mainstream audience. Right. There's a conversation. I'm not saying that it would or it wouldn't. But that is a legitimate conversation to be like, I don't know, man. Part of the reason that Iron Man took off was because you had a lot of people out there going, no, you got to, I love Iron Man. Oh my gosh, I can't believe making an Iron Man movie. And that you need some momentum at the beginning of things sometimes to really get it to catch. Right. On the other hand, the Disney marketing machine is pretty good at doing that stuff. Maybe they could have made it work anyway. That's neither here nor there. It's a long way from, gosh, it kind of makes sense to me that what Disney did to video games, they could end up doing to print comics.
Yeah.
From there to, did you hear Disney shutting down Marvel Comics? Right? There's the Bleeding Cool article, which what you were saying earlier is right alongside the Bleeding Cool article. Like, I could kind of see where maybe they might think that someday, right?
Yeah.
That's a big jump to, I heard they're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that the headlines were slightly irresponsible and that made it worse. But I agree with you. You know, maybe the argument can be made that now they've established it after Iron Man 1 and proved that they could do it. Because I agree, the momentum leading up to that was important, no question.
Yeah.
Expectations being shattered, that was important to the process. But now they've kind of earned it and they own it and it's there. So now they could shut it down? I just don't think they ever would because...
Again... perfectly legitimate to be like, gosh, I wonder if they would, what would be the conditions? I could see where there might be an argument that they would do it. And I wouldn't be shocked if someday they did. That's very different than I heard they're shutting it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just, yeah.
One day we should have a whole episode on comics are too expensive. It's a different issue, different conversation.
Yeah. No. And that's what underlies this, right?
Yeah. For me, it does. Yeah. I mean, that's the number one reason. I used to buy comics, multiple comics a month, all the time. I subscribed to many, went down to my shop, picked them up. I went crazy. And I don't do it now because they're freaking expensive. And also we have other expectations for ways we pay for our entertainment, including books now.
Yeah.
And other,
well,
other
do
stuff.
You pay for Comixology or?
Well, I have the Unlimited. Like Marvel, yeah, Unlimited? I do that.
Well, there you go. You're buying comics.
You're
you
right.
Not be buying
I'm just doing
comics,
it in this new way. And I don't want to spend. Because
there's a whole separate argument about, you know, and this plays into that Bleeding Cool article, which is, is it really comics that's suffering or is it print comics that's suffering? And are the things that Marvel has to do to satisfy shop owners dragging it down?
This
again,
is the one.
I'm very sympathetic to shop owners, sure. And I want to do everything to keep them in business because I think comic shops are cool and I want to go there.
Right,
but
right.
They're, you know, digital comics seem to sell very well. And we've seen industries get disrupted to physical stores. And there might, what's more likely to me is someday Disney or Marvel say, you know what, we're not going to do these special deals. We're already seeing examples of that happening.
Yeah.
And we might see the comic shops go away. And that would be very sad. It's along the line of theaters going away because of digital films. And that's a whole argument and a conversation to be had as well. But I don't think it means that Marvel isn't useful as a comic publisher. Even if it became an entirely digital, Disney's going to want to mine that audience. Mm-hmm. That's like a farm team audience for their movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major league audience for comics readers, but for the people who don't read comics, it's like, hey, we found out what works over here. That's why Netflix bought Miller World. You see comic producers, independent comic producers, as valuable sources of new stories to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And if Disney has Marvel, they would be ridiculously stupid to shut it down right now.
Right. And the larger point is the problems that the comic book industry is having isn't just a Marvel problem, it's across the board kind of problem. DC's struggling, some of the independent ones are having, you know, not the best years or whatever. And a lot of it has to do with this transition of print to digital and comics as a service versus comics as a $4 issue I have to buy. And
right.
Nothing retains its value like it used to because it's so ubiquitous and it's not like the old days where you had a weird one-off comic. And like a lot of things have play a factor here. The one you can't ignore is the relationship with the shops. And so yeah. I don't know what the long term looks like. I think it probably looks a lot like other industries that were disrupted by the internet and technology and ways of positioning that stuff, be it music or film. And now maybe comics are having to deal with the same thing. Certainly books have gone through this and still do. You know, people are mad at Amazon. Books cost too little. We're not making enough. Like there's all this. It's always something with these things. I think they're going to have their own little thing to go through. And it's going to be rough and it's going to be hard to deal with. But at the end of the day, It'll be more what consumers want, and they'll find a way to make the money they're going to do it. And if anybody can retain that during the rough period, it's freaking Marvel and Disney. They'll be fine. No. They're going to be fine, well, dude.
You look at in music, two things are booming right now, streaming and vinyl.
Yeah.
Because people like to have physical objects. Vinyl ain't nearly as big as streaming, but it's resurgent, mm-hmm. right? And in print, ebooks are okay, but hardback paper books are actually doing very well. Same reason. Sometimes people are like, you know what? I just want to have print. I just want to have paper. Yeah, yeah. So there is no reason to think that in a world where Netflix is buying Miller World, where they're hiring people like Adam Christopher to write novelizations of Stranger Things, that Disney isn't going to find a very good use for Marvel as a content creation for print machine. Mm. It may not be single issue comic books anymore. It may be digital versus print. You know, there is going to be a shift in how comics are delivered, and it's going to be painful. Yeah. But I don't think they shut it down.
No.
That's just silly.
Now, with DC, Warner Brothers might be in a worse pinch. They'd be the ones I would be more worried about, at least selling it off or paring it down, or, you know.
Why?
Well, just because DC's, it's not the same.
Yeah, but AT&T owns it now. Same argument as Disney. Like, they can afford to have that thing break even if it's feeding the money machine that's Warner Brothers Studios, yeah. which you can say their movies aren't very good all you want. They are making money for Warner.
Well, the freaking Aquaman made a lot of freaking money.
Yeah.
And the sequel's already greenlit. Like, yeah, you're not wrong. They just have a different place in the zeitgeist in terms of who we think is killing it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, yeah. Well, like, yes, they're going to, listen, DC and Marvel are going to be here long after Tom and I are dead. There. So a couple of weeks.
Oh, man. We're not long for this world.
No. But don't worry, comics will be here.
Let's talk about one of these live-action feature films based on intellectual property. Mattel and MGM are teaming up on a movie based on The Viewmaster.
What is going on, dude?
You know that thing that you hold up to your eyes and it shows you 3D pictures because mm-hmm. you got the little wheel in it? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Also, not the first time a movie deal based on The Viewmaster has been struck. In 2009... the toy was set up at DreamWorks and being developed by KO Paper Products, and the company then run by writer-producer Alex Kurtzman and Bob Orsi, you may know them from Fringe or Star Trek, were going to make it. That project eventually became inactive, so now MGM and Mattel are making a run at it. MGM and Mattel also partnering on an American Girl movie. Don't forget Mattel's Hot Wheels and Barbie also in development, and Masters of the Universe has a new bit of momentum, according to Hollywood Reporter at Sony.
Well, actually, I see this all as good news, and I'm probably a little bit surprised that it's taken the toy movie crossover greenlit deals longer than they have. It's taken longer than I thought it would, because I think the success of Transformers, even when it's bad, has been phenomenal money wise, and so I would have expected more action on that front way sooner than this. And all we got really in between all those years were some cameo type things in Pixar movies or, you know, little things here or there. But the idea that these toys to film deals aren't made more often is surprising to me. The one that gets me excited in this list is the idea of a comeback for He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, because I have a soft spot for that stupid stuff. You and I have watched didn't we watch the Christmas special or something? We did something like that together.
Yeah. We did a special autopilot, I think.
Yeah. And it was terrible, but great. You know, I have a soft spot for that Filmation garbagey early '90s, late '80s stuff. And I wouldn't mind seeing a decent adaptation of He-Man. But I also like that the Dolph Lundgren thing exists, cause it's real stupid, but kind of great. These are all good ideas. They should put these together. However, saying that, the Viewmaster is not a platform for which you should make a film.
I was going to ask. You said they're all good ideas.
Oh, a very, very huge exception at the very lead of this story. I don't understand.
And it's not just because you're worried about getting pink eye from Viewmaster.
No, although I hadn't thought of that, but, you know, that was the VR of our childhood. That's how kids had spread their
Drissel
diseases.
In the chat room. He's the one who asked that question.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, it is. It's the pink eye device of the day. And all I'm saying is, what's your story? Like, at least Battleship made sense. You could have battleships. Well, you have battleships with torpedoes and war. I mean,
you could tell any battleship story, I guess, and call it based on the game Battleship. But right. there was really no way to tell the story of the game Battleship other than just to do a naval battle story.
Right. So that's what they'll probably do here. And that's what's going to bug me. Viewmaster is going to end up being some magical freaking device.
Well, it's going to be virtual. It's going to be a virtual reality. Oh, right?
Probably,
it's
right?
It's got to be what it is.
Probably what it is. Or some genius
at a toy.
You're going to
get sucked in the Viewmaster universe, and it's all going to be 3D realism.
It's going to be like that with those Flubber movies. It's going to be this, you know, just normal weirdo scientist or toy manufacturer. Some nerd on the fourth floor next to the mailroom comes up with some amazing new thing. Everyone thinks it's stupid until they realize it's not. And now all the major governments are after it.
What if it's a Jumanji-like thing? That's where you pick up the Viewmaster and whatever you've got in there, you get sucked into that world. So you can go traveling around in Herbie the Love Bug or Phoenix, Arizona. Mm. Or, both of which were actual Viewmaster reels that I have.
I mean, what could they do? Because also think of this. Viewmaster means nothing to the kids today. They don't care.
Mattel's trying to change that. That's why they want to do this, right? Because they've got a new digital Viewmaster that they're trying to market.
Right. I guess that may work, but the nostalgia factor and the name Viewmaster is so buried into the lives of kids who grew up in the 70s
and
80s.
What if they combine it? It's Viewmasters of the Universe.
All right. But can Skeletor wear one the whole time?
Yeah, and it's Skeletor in the 3D images of Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, I can see the Grand Canyon, you fools! I'd be all into that. Now you've got me hooked. But yeah, I don't know how I feel about any of this. The Barbie thing has great potential
American
for like
American Girl
parody.
Makes sense too,
sure,
right? Like,
sure.
Oh, you just take some of those characters, you put them in a movie, kids will love it.
Right.
I can see that working.
Yeah, yeah. Care Bears and My Little Ponies and all those sorts of things just lend themselves to let's make some more content around them.
Hot Wheels is just a racing movie where, yeah. you know, the toys become real.
I mean, maybe what's happened is some of these, this is what I hope happened, actually. A lot of them saw what happened with the Lego movie and its success and its sequel and its success.
And said, I bet that is part of it.
Yeah. So you take that approach to Hot Wheels. Suddenly I'm interested. Mm-hmm. You know, that sounds funny and well-made and tongue in cheek, and like it's a good Hot Wheels fits into that real well. But if they're trying to make a serious movie with a bunch of car race drivers, and then you just ended up with Need for Speed again, which was terrible. Terrible. Mm-hmm. Aaron Paul should be, and I love him, he should be embarrassed as a garbage follow up to Breaking Bad.
Hey,
worst
now,
thing.
You leave Aaron Paul alone. He needs to cash a check like everybody.
Yeah. Well, he's coming back for that one off Breaking Bad movie, and he's mm-hmm. doing there's something else.
He had a Hulu series that was pretty popular.
Yeah,
too.
I liked it. The Path, that was good. Yep. And he just got hired for something that was kind of a big... Oh, he's... No, is he in Dune also? Everyone's in Dune.
Yeah, I think all of Hollywood's in Dune.
Yeah.
So I think anybody you like is in Dune.
I think you and I are in Dune. They just haven't called us yet. But I think we'll
be in. I like you. You must be in Dune.
Yeah, you can be Baron... what's his name? Baron Mon...
Harkonnen?
Harkonnen. You can be Baron Harkonnen.
The fat guy?
Just
thanks.
With a bunch
thanks
of makeup.
A lot, Scott.
Makeup and prosthetics. Inside, you're just a little, you're skinny Tom.
Listen,
inside.
I know I had a burrito yesterday, but gee.
Whoa, Tom, slow down. A burrito, wow.
I ate hummus for lunch, okay? Oh, come okay. on, I'm trying.
Jeez Louises.
Speaking of large things, a 26-foot-long humpback whale carcass was found on the island of Marajo at the mouth of the Amazon River, about 50 feet from the sea. The best guess is the whale died in the ocean and was carried inland by rough weather and high tides. These whales, however, are usually in the north coast of Brazil between August and November, not February. So why it was even in the ocean to begin with is a mystery, much less how it got carried inland on this island.
So we covered this story briefly on TMS one morning, and I was irritated by the headline because the headline makes it sound like there was a giant whale in the Amazon.
Like hundreds of miles inland. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's only 50 feet.
If
it's
50 feet, it's not that far. It's not completely
crazy. But it's still
crazy.
Unusual. Yeah.
Was it a full, I mean, that's the part I guess I never knew. Was it a full grown adult whale?
I think it was a calf.
Okay. So a smaller.
Probably got separated from its pack.
Yeah.
And then died in the ocean. It's very sad.
Yeah, it is sad and shouldn't have probably died, but. The way they made it sound was like, whoa, how'd a whale get in the forest? And then people went crazy about that. And then they found out, oh, well, it was just 50 feet away and it's at the mouth of the thing.
Well,
but still.
Both yeah. are wrong, right? It's wrong to make it sound like this thing was found in the jungle as if it was found nowhere near the ocean, but also 50 feet is still a lot of really far from the beach, right? Like it would be hard to get that whale 50 feet away from the ocean. So it's still a mystery.
Yeah. I mean, it's more of a scientific one, and I like those better anyway, because then there's not so much. You kind of know what you're dealing with. It's like, all right, so this far away from it. It's this time of year. That's also weird. But that limits it down. We got to figure out how I got over here, in, 50 feet. I love that kind of stuff. That's a mystery I can dig on. What I don't like is
poachers.
Poachers are the worst. I hope it's not the poachers. You think it is?
It's those whale poachers.
Ah, they're famous for
sneaking their whales through the islands.
Maybe it's like, so there was another sighting down there this week where a giant spider the size of a big dinner plate was dragging off an opossum after it died, was dragging it into the forest. That's a sight to see. So maybe these spiders are getting together and going, we've been bothering with these stupid possum. Maybe we just go the big money.
Yeah, we should, we'll eat for days, for years. Get ourselves a whale.
All that blubber.
Anyway. It won't keep, though.
No.
A couple of other interesting items here. The Tokyo Metropolitan Government held a projection mapping event last night where they project a bunch of stuff up on a wall. People stand around and go, ooh, ah, trying to promote the Olympics, because the Olympics are coming to Tokyo in 2020. So the clip was called 3 Years to Go. It was a countdown to the upcoming Olympic Games. But what got people excited is it included the iconic Kaneda bike slide from Akira's 2020 Neo Tokyo Olympics anime.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because it's the real Olympics are mirroring the anime Olympics.
Totally get it. What's cool for me is that I just rewatched Akira last week because of no good reason. I was digging around in justwatch.com and I noticed in their big anime category, I see Akira's dubbed and not dubbed. In a nice restored cut of the film over on, I think, Amazon Prime. And
nice.
I thought, well, why am I not watching that? That's always fun for a good time. And it still is, dude. That thing's amazing. And learned all sorts of new stuff. Like, they're working on a 4K UHD sort of transfer of the thing. And they're going to do it in 60 frames per second. And there's a bunch of controversy about it because 60 frames makes it look different than the old 24 frame animation. And so there's a lot of people saying, it's not true to the original. And other people are saying, it's never looked so good. And so big division on that, and still a movie getting developed. So it's funny you should bring up Akira, because I've been all up in it lately, yelling Tetsuo at night in the middle of my dreams. he's a giant flesh monster by now. It's great. It's good stuff.
So we should have a Patreon level where we go to the 2020 Tokyo Olympics.
All right. Sounds good.
Cover it live.
Yeah. Get that going, everybody. We'll get your, we'll be on site when Akira comes, or not Akira, what's his name?
We'll cover the bike slide event.
The bike slide event, where they bash each other's heads in with pipes.
All right, we started with the trailer, we'll end with the trailer, Amazon trailer, season 4 of Man in the High Castle, which in the trailer it announces will be the final season of the Man in the High Castle.
Well, I'm excited and bummed at the same time.
I'm actually okay. I'm happy. I love The Man in the High Castle. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite science fiction book. Mm-hmm. I was very pleased with the take on this. I've been fascinated by the fact that they've moved beyond the end of the book to material that Philip K. Dick never imagined, but still seemed to keep the spirit of it in a way that's interesting. But it shouldn't be open-ended. They should have an end in mind, and this implies that they do, so I'm glad.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, my initial reaction was, oh, no, don't end it. And then I thought, well, no, this is on your own terms. You clearly have a wrap-up for this. We're already beyond the book, like you said, so end it where you want to end it. End it on a high note. And I love it. Like, it is a great show. It's one of Amazon Prime's best in their lineup. I don't think they tout it enough. I don't think it gets recognized enough either at award shows and things. I think it should be up there on people's lists. So if you haven't seen it, see it. I found it just one of the most bingeable things that's on TV, like straight up.
We still didn't get a date when it's coming back, though. They just gave us a trailer and said, that'll be it whenever it ends.
Big chunk
whenever
of time,
we have it.
There's a big chunk of time between season 2 and 3. So maybe hopefully this will be a little shorter period of time. Between.
Yeah. Well, it's going to come this year. I just don't know when.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm down with that. Well, there you go. Get your High Castle on. Sounds like that football player from
McCormick and High Castle.
McCormick and High Castle. Coming up on autopilot, surely one of these days. All right, there's that. Thank you all to all our subredditors who submitted a lot of these stories. Tom, who do we have in particular to thank this week?
Oh, well, throw out the thanks to Jeff Rose and Ripley Ludacris and Strike It Rich One, all of whom submitted stories on our subreddit at currentgeek.reddit.com that we use today. This is where we find the geeky stuff to talk about. You're the geeks. Tell us what to talk about on Current Geek at currentgeek.reddit.com.
Get their big, gnarly nerd fingers on the pulse of pop culture. We thank you for it. Also, we thank you, dear listeners, for supporting us at patreon.com/currentgeek. Now, I know as I say this, not all of you do. And I know that a bunch of you do, and I appreciate those who do. But those of you who don't, consider it. Head on over there and look at what we've got. We've got these awesome, amazing, original art every month membership cards that we send out. Tom and I even sign these things. One day you could probably use them to, I don't know, break into our bank accounts. I have no idea what you could do with a signature like this.
Don't do that.
No, don't do that. But and we did take some precautions. It's kind of like this weird faded out.
No one uses checks anymore, do they?
No, I don't. Do you? I don't. Anyway,
I have to pay one thing with a check every month. It's kind of annoying.
Well, how would it feel for you, listeners, to just pay one simple thing with a service like Patreon? Oh, it's so simple. Just go to patreon.com/currentgeek and give us your love today. That's patreon.com/currentgeek.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Forecast used to be a show. It's spelled F-O-U-R, cast. It used to be me and Tom and then a couple of guests. We'd all get together and we predict the future in technology and entertainment and culture and all sorts of things. And we decided instead of throwing that thing away entirely, we'd make a little segment out of it. And that's what we've done. So today on Forecast, I'm going to predict the future. And it's going to sound mundane, but hear me out because I actually think this is coming. Amazon will soon come to you no matter where you happen to be. Now, they already kind of do that, right?
I was going to say, you mean to deliver items that you ordered, not like come for you.
No. They're coming for you, Tom.
You
Amazon will come.
Amazon's coming for you.
They're going to take you away to an undisclosed location.
They're going to take you to that island with the whale.
Oh, no. That's a bad idea. No, what they're going to do is instead of them having to worry about my home address and a date for delivery, they're going to combine their efforts of trying to get things to us quicker and what they've been working with when it comes to drone technology and other delivery options. And they're going to find out where I am in particular. And I'm going to allow them to do this. I'm going to give them permission to do this. This isn't something they'll do without my express permission. But if I'm walking around the park 8 miles away from my house and my new watch band, the leather watch band I decided I wanted is here, that thing's going to come with pinpoint precision, find me at the park, slowly lower down and go, boop, boom, Mr. Johnson, your watch band has arrived. And they're going to drop it in my hand, and I'll sign something if I have to, and then it takes off and does whoever's next.
Because they already get close to this. If you sign up for it, you can have things delivered to the trunk of your car.
Yeah, which is awesome.
You can have things left inside of your house. So this would just be a couple of dozen steps away from that, but it's the inklings of the beginning are here.
Yeah, they're already starting. That's why I feel like it's realistic. And also, I think that there will be a small cottage industry spring up around the idea of holding houses or spaces that are within distance of where you live or where you work that will, for convenience sake, be a bit of a holding center for all that stuff. So if you're not in a place where it can bring it directly to you, like you're in the middle of a conference meeting that takes 4 hours and you're in this closed space in the top of some building, there's not some robot's not going to bust through and hand you a thing. But instead, it'll be kept at the first floor of that building.
An alert will show up in your augmented reality glasses, right, and it will say, are you available to receive your package? And you'll say, oh, blink twice. No, snooze for an hour on my delivery.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the kind of stuff. And that's the other part I didn't really get to, is how we'll be able to communicate with this this service in real time. We don't have to get in front of a computer. We don't even have to pull up phones. It'll be things like wearables, a quick glance at a watch and a tap. Like you said, augmented reality glasses of some sort. HoloLens is no longer $3,500 and actually fits on your head. That kind of
feature. It goes in your temples, actually. It gets embedded.
Yeah, just a little inside of there. You got to, imagine if you're a surgeon and you're sick of, like, I don't know, fixing people's knees and taking care of old people's joints, your new specialty could be the sensor implants, because one would assume you can't do them by yourself. You'd have to go in for a quick inpatient sort of, or outpatient, I guess, experience at some clinic, and the guy would go, put those in your head and you're out of there, right? That's another business you could get involved in, as you could be a surgeon who puts sensors in your brain. But I like this idea of, I don't know why it matters to me, because it doesn't actually matter to me that much. Like, I'm fine getting mail and packages whenever I get them, but there's something about the idea of just, I'm at the mall and a little robot comes up and hands me a thing. I like that for some reason.
Well, it's the thing where it's like, you don't know you need it until it's there and you're comparing it to what you have, right?
Right.
So the Tom of 1977, who was like, oh man, we have to wait 4 to 6 weeks for the baseball cards to arrive that I ordered from Renato Galasso. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the best you can ever hope for, is amazed that I can go online and order something in 2 days. Mm-hmm. And now the Tom from 2010 is amazed that I can go online and order some things and they get delivered the same day. And so it just keeps getting like, well, you know, it would be even nicer if I ordered the thing and it just appears within minutes, yeah, right where I'm at, and I don't have to leave it. You know, I don't have to have it delivered to a particular location. It just knows where I am. Yeah.
Well, and what's easy to do is think that it's easy to get in the conversation about how can this be good for us? We need to, you know, we can't have everything just handed to us on a silver platter. And I say to that, yeah, I can. Like in this particular case, and you don't have to be rich for this. I'm saying just be like, you know, I need a big cable from Monoprice. You beep, boop, beep on your phone. A half hour later, robot hovers in, yep, front of you with a smile and hands it to you.
Here's where I'm gonna differ with you.
Okay.
I don't think it'll be Amazon.
Oh, interesting. Who do you think the big behemoth?
I don't know who it'll be, but the one thing in your story here so far that rings hollow for me is Amazon using drones to deliver. They were amazed getting some press about a thing that they still don't do.
Yeah.
So that everybody associates Amazon with drone delivery. Mm-hmm. And they've got some very minor tests. But there are, and this is why you should listen to Daily Tech News Show, people, there are multiple companies actually using drones to actually deliver packages in multiple parts of the world, including places like Tanzania and Rwanda, and Amazon isn't any of them.
Right.
So I will hedge my bets and say maybe Amazon buys one of these companies as they're getting big enough to pull this off. But I bet somebody else gets into that logistics game and figures out how to out Amazon, especially if, you know, Jeff Bezos isn't going to live forever. He steps down or decides to move away and focus more on Blue Origin or something, or the Washington Post. You know, Amazon will not always be as vital as it is now, and somebody might pull the rug out from under him.
Right. That's a good point. When the Fox in the chat says Amazon already does this for people, there's a video of a guy ordering things for some homeless people and having it delivered directly to them. Yeah, but there's stationary targets in that scenario. It's an address.
Yeah, no, that's true. There are, you can have in certain locations in limited areas, tell Amazon to deliver your thing to a place that isn't necessarily an address.
But it's still a static place, right? Like it's a static,
and it's limited.
Location.
What Scott's talking about is even beyond that. But it is one of those things where like, well, we can do this. So it could lead to Scott's universe where you just order the thing and it knows where you are and you're cool with that.
Yeah. And even dynamic ways, like it almost gets to me before I board my plane. Doesn't quite make it. I get off the plane in Denver and the robot shows up. And it may be a different robot from a different warehouse with the same item. Maybe that thing travels across state. My point is, it geolocates you. You are the walking address, and you're no longer limited to like, yeah, oh, do I have to sign for that? I should call and tell them to wait for it. Is anyone home right now? Because I got a box coming. I hope they don't steal it from the port. None of that stuff would matter in my.
And I think this is beyond phones and GPS too. This is they just know where you are.
There
it's
you go.
Maybe machine learning, visual recognition, embedded sensors in your temple, embedded augmented reality that reports the location. I don't know, but. Yeah. This is gonna happen several generations away, where the idea of carrying around a phone is gonna feel old fashioned to the people who experience this. I bet.
That's right. All right. Well, there's all that. Now let's play let's do this. Where is it? Here it is. It's the best thing of all time this week. That's right. We talk about stuff that we've discovered this week or are doing this week that we just think is the best thing of all time this week. And Tom will begin. What are you doing this week?
I am having so much fun listening to the Harry Potter books on audiobook. When they first appeared on Pottermore, I did not download them. We decided to read Harry Potter and the Sorcerer / Philosopher's Stone for Sword and Laser this month. And because of that, I'm like, well, I've already read it in print. I've seen the movie. Let me listen to the audiobook. So good. The reading is great. The voices are different, although Hagrid's kind of the same as the movies, but it's different takes. And you forget if you haven't read these ever, if you haven't read them in a long time, that there is more in them than in the movies. And when you're getting it read to you, it feels like another movie, like a better movie version, because you can see the pictures in your head, right? But also there's things that they had to cut out of the movies for time that they don't cut out of the audiobooks. It's so much fun.
Is it still Jim Dale, or who is it different versions now that you've
got? It's the Jim Dale one.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Jim Dale has magic in his voice. He was the, you know, they always talk about perfect casting or whatever. Somebody's just the right guy for the job. John Williams was perfect for Star Wars, all that kind of sort of thing. To me, Jim Dale is the perfect choice to read those Harry Potter books. He's incredible.
I wouldn't have known that, but now I do, because you're right.
Yeah, no, he's something special. And so here's how you know him, though, and you didn't know you knew him, and how I knew him and didn't know I knew him. And it took me a while to figure it out. This is some years ago, but he was the guy who, on Hot Lead and Cold Feet, the old Disney live-action Western, played both the bad guy and the nice British guy, the twins in that movie. Do you remember this?
For real?
That's Jim Dale.
That's Jim Dale.
That's Jim Dale. He also the narrator of Pushing Up Daisies or Pushing Daisies.
I'm surprised I don't have Hot Lead and Cold Feet on Viewmaster.
You should watch it.
It's that era, right?
Yeah, and it's a fun, it's like the Herbie Love Bug era, like when they were
It's Don ones, Knotts, right?
Yes, it's totally Don Knotts in that movie. And a bunch of other people. But anyway,
and Jim Dale.
He's really good. Somebody said in the chat that Stephen Fry does them. I didn't know he did an amazing job. I'm reading the chat. I didn't know he did a version of the Harry Potter books. Maybe those are the European ones. Well, that's weird because Jim Dale's also British. Whatever. I'd be curious to know if those exist. I wouldn't mind hearing Stephen Fry's take on it. But yeah, Jim Dale's amazing. And I'm kind of jealous. I listened to his versions of those books probably four times over in the aughts. It's been a while. Should probably pick it up again. It's real good.
It's real good. I was supposed to just read the first Harry Potter book, and I had so much fun that I went right into Chamber of Secrets, and I'm probably going to end up listening to all seven of them eventually.
Yeah, why not? They're great. I read, the final two books I think I read in book form and haven't heard the audio versions, but I wouldn't mind going back for a listen again. Especially 4 and 5 are really good in the audio versions. So good. Anyway. For me this week, it's the wire cutter. People are like, what, you got like a tool in your drawer that you cut wires with? No. Thewirecutter.com. No way. They are awesome, and I've always thought they were awesome. They're currently owned by the New York Times, which I think made them better because they got more money and more budget and more options, and they seem like they have a broader coverage of the kind of stuff.
They're owned by
the
New York Times. That's correct.
So they, for those who don't know about them, if you Google them, you'll find them easily. They review common products and tell you what the best ones are based on the rigorous testing they do with those things. So if it's a pair of gaming headphones, they'll tell you the 50 brands they tried and why the top three made it there, why number one is where it is. And then they also give you a good budget one where price and quality find a good, you know, a good equilibrium there. And they do it across the board. It used to be just like electronic stuff and, you know, here's the best laptop of 2018 or whatever. But it kind of is everything now. You want the best washer-dryer combo. They'll tell you what it is if you're looking for the best smart light bulb or even kitchenware stuff for cooks and chefs, like traditionally non-electronic stuff. They definitely do that as well. And they saved me twice this week from having to deal with family tech support issues where people are like, I need to know what the best one of these things are, and they're all coming to me, and I don't actually really know. So for me to know, I'd have to go do a bunch of research. Instead, I just sent them a link to the wire cutter and solved the problem. Like, here are the best computer speakers was one of them. Go get them. Boom, you're done. And they got the ones they recommended, and I'm 100% sure they're going to be as happy as they possibly could be because the wire cutter is reliable that way. So I just think in the world of an internet that is definitely full of plenty of places you can trust and, you know, enjoy and count on, but also lots and lots of places that can lead you in different directions and lead you astray and don't always give you the full whatever. It's nice to know there's a place like the Wirecutter that just gives you the straight skinny. And even if you're out there going, ah, oh, New York Times owns them, I don't trust them at all, barp, 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 fake news. If you're saying that to yourself, I get it. That this isn't a news slash, there's no news on the Wirecutter. There's no bias in there. It's just...
No, and in fact, one of the nice things about the Wirecutter is they're very transparent about everything that they do to test this stuff.
Right.
So if you don't trust them, you can dig really deep into their testing methods.
Yeah, and do them yourself if you don't like their results or whatever. Like, they lay it all out. They show pictures of everything. It's insane to see their desks just covered in whatever the item is. I had to find a good pocket knife last year. I wanted a good lock blade sort of utility knife. And I had no idea where to start. Everybody's got an opinion. Amazon's just rife with these things. Rife with knives. Or knives. Anyway, so I went there, and they made a recommendation. And in the case of in mine, I didn't really need the high-end one. I got the budget one because they really liked it for the price. And I thought, well, for the price and for what I'm using it for, this will be perfect. So they're awesome. And I hope they never go away. And I hope other sites emulate them. And they've been around forever. And y'all should use the Wirecutter. They're awesome.
I second that emotion. Oh. I've used the Wirecutter successfully multiple times. The only time I personally have ever run into something that didn't quite work was when they recommended some luggage that I still use and I love, but they said, yeah, you can, the one we recommend is a little wider than the spec on most airlines calls for, but most airlines are more worried with length than they are with width. And over the couple of years that I've had this luggage, it seems like the airlines are getting a little more concerned with the width. So I'm like, oh, I wish I would have just got a standard one. But honestly, that's the worst I can say about
them. Yeah. And that's more of a shifting trends kind of thing. Yeah. You know, so you have to, you know, adjust accordingly. But anyway, yeah, check them out. Wirecutter and Harry Potter audiobooks. With spoken word by Jim Dale. He was both a good guy and bad guy.
You're a wizard, Harry.
All right. Quick email before we leave today. currentgeek@gmail.com. You can also leave us voicemails now. If you'd like to send us a Current Geek voicemail, you can. 801-471-0462. Or again, that email address is currentgeek@gmail.com. We got one from Jessa, who says, Dear Tom and Scott, my uncle tells me the original Obi-Wan did not like Star Wars and hated being a part of it. Do you longtime SW fans have a take on this? I hate to think of old Ben being a crank about the most important film series in popular history. Jessa. I remember him. There was a lot of talk about him at the time while he was making it, thinking it was just tripey and dumb.
First of all, how does your uncle know? Is he friends with Alec Guinness?
Yeah, well, that's what's that about? I mean, maybe it was on a DVD trivia or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean... Also, I've had a lot of differing opinions about things that I worked on over the years, and depending on the day I had doing them, I might have said I hated them or not,
right?
Depending, and that doesn't necessarily mean I hated them. I think Alec Guinness was dismissive of Star Wars. I think that's fair to say. You can see it in some of his interviews, and he might have at a couple of times in his life said, oh, what a crock. But later he also said some very nice things about it, and I think he learned to appreciate it. And one thing I like about Alec Guinness is he is a thoughtful person. So I don't know what I would ask your uncle how he knows that. Also, even if Alec Guinness did hate Obi-Wan, who cares? You could still love Obi-Wan. Not every character who plays a thing in the movie has to love that character for you to love the character yourself.
Right. And also at the ground level, I would say this. At the ground level of making that movie, Sir Alec Guinness is used to making big, broad stage presentations, and the films he were in were big, emotional, traditional actors' movies, you know? And he's got this job, this gig to do this weird little, what seemed to him at the time, again, the perspective is everything. It seems like this small, weird science fiction movie that seems a little goofy and over the top, and we're in the 70s and things are funky then, and you don't have the soundtrack yet. You don't have the amazing visuals yet. You just know you're showing up every day in Tunisia or wherever they had him film this stuff, and you're just sort of like, all right, well, I'm talking about the Force. Like, this probably seemed super dumb. I would probably think it seems super dumb.
I feel like it's insulting to Alec Guinness to assume that he showed up for this and hated it, right? Right. Like, he was at such a point in his career that he only could take jobs that he loathed. Right. Like, no, Alec Guinness took this probably because he thought it sounded interesting.
Yeah.
And then he did it, and he's like, I don't know, you guys, this script, you know? But I don't know either. I don't know what he thought. I don't know Alec Guinness. All I know is what we've heard speculated about and what he's actually said.
Yeah.
And what he's actually said has never been that bad.
Yeah.
What people have said he said, and what people have guessed maybe he said, and what people thought maybe he felt, it's all speculation. Who knows? Yeah.
His true love really was his greatest invention, the Guinness Book of World Records. It's fantastic. And the
beer. He also invented the beer.
Oh, I didn't realize that. The Guinness beer as well. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, maybe after all that, you do hate Star Wars. I don't know.
He was also very ashamed that his beer was not as dark as Murphy's. Who was also up for the role of Obi-Wan.
Oh, Murphy. Shoot, yeah. Missed it by that much. Well, what are you going to do?
Oh, wait, that's a different show where we just make up things instead of actually knowing them.
This is all true. I'll tell you what, next week we do have another show, and it is the Current Geek Film Festival. That's right, we continue with another big film from one Steven Spielbergo, who we probably should, next week we should probably have a little bit of context. Well, I don't know, maybe not next week, but sometime we should talk about his current, not rant, his desire to make Netflix.
His attempt to try to get Netflix disqualified from the Oscars.
Yeah.
We talked about that a bunch on Cord Killers yesterday.
Yeah, a lot of dust up on that.
People want to hear a conversation.
That's what you guys should do. Go listen to that. It's interesting conversation, I think, to have because,
yeah,
I don't know.
And therefore, I'm watching E.T. on a digital copy on my television just to make him upset.
So am I. That is the Current Geek Film Festival.
Actually,
E.T.
I'm probably going to watch it on an iPad on an air.
Yeah, and I'll probably probably an iPad on my bed, and he will not be happy about that. That's E.T. the Extraterrestrial. That's next week right here on Current Geek. I almost called us Legal Geek because his words are right in front of my face. Stick around to the end of the show to see what Legal Geek has to say about review. He reviews copyright news on recent class action stuff involving the Dark Tower series, my favorite book series of all time, and the Game of Life laptop game, tabletop game rather. So enjoy those. That's coming up right here in a second from The Legal Geek, a segment we love, and we hope you guys do too. I think that's everything. Tom, do you got anything to promote before we go? I know you're heading out of town.
If you're listening to this before Saturday, that would be Saturday, March 9th, and you're anywhere within striking distance of Austin, Texas, come on down. It's the South by So Wasted event. It's going to be concert. It's going to be live podcasts. It's going to be fun. I'll be wearing a giant foam thumb. You just got to come by. All the details are at podcastlink.com/nightattack, which you could even say to your smart speaker, like, hey, go to podcastlink.com/nightattack, and it will give you all the information. Tickets are going fast, though. Brian said they're pretty much in the single digits left, so you might want to get in on that action. Again, podcastlink.com/nightattack, March 9th. In the afternoon in Austin, Texas.
Very nice. What's this foam thumb? I don't know anything. What's going on? I guess I don't know until you do it. Is
there will
secret?
Be celebrity storytelling. it's a classic Night Attack segment called Don't Get Brodied, where you have to keep the audience's... you usually have to keep Brian and Justin's attention.
Yeah.
And they do a thumb to tell you whether they're interested or losing interest. I will be the thumb on behalf of the audience.
I remember playing this at one of the Nerdtaculars, and Veronica had her thumb down a lot. She was always thumbing down.
Yeah, she's a tough judge.
She is a tough judge. For everything else, check out frogpants.com. Lots of cool stuff happening. We got our meetup happening in Vegas in April. It's like a month and something away. We're very excited about that. Lots of other things coming down the pike. So is it pipe or pike? Coming down the pike? Pipe. Pipe.
Phone home.
What's the old phrase? Phone home. That's it. Everybody phone home. Dad, don't get stuck in a ditch with an alien. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. Until then, for me, for Tom, take care and we'll see you then.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we check in on a couple recent copyright cases that touch on some of our favorite subjects, fantasy novels and tabletop games. In January, a Rhode Island federal court ruled that the heirs of some people involved with the creation of the tabletop board game The Game of Life could not control the board game's intellectual property, at least from a copyright standpoint. This was a huge win for Hasbro, who stood otherwise to potentially lose the rights to print the still-popular classic of the tabletop industry. In the 1950s, the physical prototype for Life was made by employees of Bill Markham. However, a fellow toy developer named Reuben Kramer developed the idea into a product at his own expense, which made him the sole rights controller when it comes to copyrights. Under separate agreement, Kramer has been paying Markham and his estate more than 30% of royalties received from the license with Hasbro, but the court judged that this does not mean they also share control of the copyright. This is important because in recent years, more copyright owners have taken advantage of a right known as the termination right. For licenses and assignments of copyright that occurred on or after 1978, the original author or their heirs can terminate the license or assignment 35 to 40 years after those rights are granted. This has come into play starting in the last 3 to 5 years, and it generally allows authors to renegotiate successful licenses or assignments to extract more money from a publisher. Markham's estate and company were claiming control of the copyright based on their involvement of making the game prototype, which would have allowed them to exercise the termination right and go directly for more money from Hasbro or some other game publisher. But the court held that this was a work made for hire under the law, therefore controlled only by the financial backer Kramer, who can choose for himself whether to terminate the copyright license and renegotiate his terms. It's obviously easier for Hasbro to negotiate, if necessary, with one owner instead of many, so that's why this is a big win for Hasbro and their game of Life. Our second story comes from the past week, when a Florida federal court dismissed a copyright infringement lawsuit against Stephen King, based on the Dark Tower series. A nephew of a now-deceased comic writer named William Dubay claimed that Dubay's 1977 horror comic book The Rook had been ripped off by King when he created the wildly successful Dark Tower series of novels. With this series now spawning a movie and a TV series, a finding of copyright infringement could lead to massive damages for Dubay's heirs. But the Florida court dismissed this claim, because while there is some overlap between the time-traveling, cowboy lead characters of these two works, this was only a surface-level similarity, and the differences or dissimilarities go much deeper for these characters and works. Even if Stephen King had been inspired by The Rook, which seems uncontested, he created his own universe and copied only typical tropes and well-known story elements in these fiction genres, according to the court. So just like Hasbro, King can sleep a little better, knowing his IP has been defended against a financial and legal attack. The bottom line is, these are but two of many examples of how successful creators or publishers can fall into legal battles when big money is involved for copyrighted works. The music industry is rife with such copyright claims and lawsuits, for example. With copyright terminations now becoming a viable option, expect even more big stories and products containing creative authorship works in the future. We'll keep our eyes on future cases of nerdy interest, but if you ever need help navigating these choppy waters of copyrights and IP, just reach out to the Legal Geek or another local counsel you're comfortable with. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.